I'm so pleased to have Nadeem Hassani with us from EarnUp. Nadeem, before we get into it, could you tell me a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, sure. And thanks so much for having us
on
this. So my name is Nadeem. I'm the co-founder and CEO of EarnUp.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in Greece, spent the first 10 years of my life there. And I started coding when I was 9 years old on an old Atari XL. So I don't know if anybody like knows old computers, but I had like 32K of memory. We used to load programs off of cassette tapes when that was like actually a thing.
So you were a gamer.
So I was a gamer and I started coding. Like I thought it was the coolest thing in the world, right?
Yeah.
My dad did make us like take typing classes on the computer, which was also like really interesting. When I was 10, we moved from, interestingly, Athens, Greece to Sparta, New Jersey. Mm. I was like a big geek before it was cool. So I kind of had like two lives. I like used to like play video games and do the coding thing at like night. And then like during the daytimes, would like go do the typical like school thing and like play tennis and stuff like that.
Right.
So I kind of like hid, like, they wouldn't really want
nerd
people.
In secret.
Yeah, yeah, nerd. I like that. I haven't heard that before. Nerd in secret. And so I did that for through high school and really took a liking to computers, though. So I went to Rutgers University, which is the state university in New Jersey, and got a degree in electrical and computer engineering. So I really, really loved it. I interned on Wall Street for a couple summers and realized that there was more than just a world of technology out there. So after looking around at other things I can do, I decided to go to law school. So I went to Harvard Law. And I, it was really cool, actually, the first, maybe I shouldn't say this, but the first semester I was there, I linked up with a professor who was actually suing AT&T under like net neutrality grounds on like behalf of the city of Cambridge. So there's some, there was some cool stuff that the law school was doing. Continued to take an interest in technology and the law. And so when I graduated, I went and worked in New York doing like M&A and tech law and that kind of thing. About 2 years in, there was an opportunity to join McKinsey & Company, and I realized like I wasn't going to be a lawyer for the rest of my life. I thought I could do it for a while, but not the rest of my life. And you know, McKinsey is a great place to be. So I went over to McKinsey and I spent 5 years there. I did a bunch of stuff in financial services, but also in other areas like ad technology and real estate. McKinsey's a great opportunity to work in different functions and different industries. And while I was there, I actually had an opportunity to join a couple of my colleagues who were starting a startup. And at the last minute, I changed my mind and I said, hey, I've got these Middle Eastern roots, which I can talk more about in a minute. And I have these Middle Eastern roots and I've never really worked abroad before. And McKinsey's got 80 offices worldwide. And so I called my parents up and I said, hey, mom, dad, like, I want to go work in the Middle East. Where should I go? And they're like, go to Dubai. Go to Dubai. So I went to Dubai and I did a couple of, I did about 6 months of Dubai with McKinsey over there working on some cool real estate stuff. And while I was there, I found a partner who was leaving McKinsey to go start like a $1 billion private equity fund. And so I joined and I kind of like moved all my stuff over to Dubai. And I spent about 3 years there total doing private equity on the buy side, like doing investments everywhere from like Egypt to Saudi to Korea to India. And that gave me a good introduction into like buy side and how investments work. While I was there, I met my co-founder. Actually, the day I showed up for my job, sitting next to me was my, you know, then to become co-founder. And then the financial crisis hit. And so we started developing some theses around like hyperinflation and the real estate markets. And as a result of that, started investing from Dubai into the United States, just the two of us on like a personal level.
And this is post 2008?
This is post, this is around like 2009, 2010
okay.
or so. And that's how we started working together. And that's how we started getting into real estate and mortgages and really starting to dig into try to understand how that market worked.
Interesting.
He subsequently left and went to LA. I went to San Francisco and joined a different fund out there. But around 2013 or so, we decided to put our heads together after I started having and my parents started having some bad experiences in the mortgage space.
So tell me a little bit more about what EarnUp is.
Yeah, so we're a mission-driven business. And so it's a concept that's, you know, that people are talking about more recently, which is known as a double bottom line, double bottom line company. So we have a belief that you can do.
Can you explain what that is? Because no one's going to know that.
Yeah. So
so what is a double bottom line company?
Yeah, it's a belief that you can do social good and make money at the same time.
Got
And the way that is exemplified in our business. So our mission is to help build a financial system, services system that works for everybody.
Got it.
Okay. And so the way that is exemplified in our business, or the best way, to, maybe the best way to think about it, is like we have a set of investors, like venture capital investors, who have an expectation that we're going to deliver on their investment or return on their investment. And
they're
like very focused on that. They love the mission-driven side of the business, but the, you know, they're there to make money,
right?
And to help us grow and serve entrepreneurs, right? And we really, really like those investors and we appreciate them. Equally, we have a second bottom line, which is to deliver social impact. So the first set of investors will like say, hey, what's your revenue? How many users do you have? You know, how many enterprise contracts have you signed? Second set of investors are also focused on that. And they are also focused on ensuring that we deliver social impact. So let me give you two examples of social impact. Internally, when we look internally at EarnUp, 43% of our engineers are women. Less than 40% of the team is white, right? So those are kind of some of the things that we try to focus on to deliver opportunity to the people that work inside of our business.
And that was conscientious and purposeful.
Conscientious and purposeful, yeah. I couldn't tell you how exactly we did it. Just a lot of hard work. You just keep doing it and doing it, and eventually works. Externally looking, right, we're scheduled to save over $500 million for all of our customers over the life of their loans, right? So that's something that we focus on is like, how do we get users to save more money on their loans?
Right. Right?
So that would be, you know, that's the way we think about double bottom line.
So you and your family had some bad experiences in the mortgage space post 2008. And was that tied to the inception of or the idea for EarnUp?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily post 2008. It was just through the life of the loan. So as I mentioned, my like parents are immigrants, right? So they moved to the United States. And in 1986, they bought their first home on a 30-year mortgage. It's actually the home that they still live in, my childhood home. And they bought it on a 30-year mortgage. So if you do 1986 plus 30, that's 2016. And so they should own their own home today. But if I go to my mom and dad and I say, hey, mom, dad, congrats, you live the American dream and you own your own home. They'll be like, we've definitely lived the American dream. My dad's very emotional about that, right? Got three kids, six grandkids now, like in the US, you know, kind of left the Middle East, right?
Right.
But they don't own that. He'll be like, we don't own our own home. We're going to own our home in like 2030 or something like that. And so the question for me became like, what turned a 30-year mortgage into effectively like almost a 50-year mortgage? And what happened to them happens to like 70 to 80% of Americans, right? That they just never end up in home ownership because they always do, they always end up like making mistakes in the way that they manage that home investment, right? Mm. One of the mistakes they made was not making extra principal payments, right? So in 2011, when I bought my first home, I was like, okay, I'm not gonna fall into the same trap. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna make some extra principal payments and try to own the home earlier. So if you make extra principal payments, like the common, like, the common advice like a wealth manager will give is like make an extra payment per year, right? If you do that, you can reduce the term of the loan from like 30 years to like 25 years. So that's what I did. I decided to throw an extra $100 on every single payment. And about 6 months later, I'll never forget this, I open up a statement 6 months later and I had contributed an extra $100 over those 6 months, so $600. And the bank had taken that $600 and posted it to future interest payments, as opposed to current principal payments. So that essentially meant I was trying to reduce the term to 25 years.
That's legal to do that? Well, they can allot.
I don't know. Well, I thought it was illegal at the time. And this is why I was saying like, this is why my background's like interesting as it relates to this issue, which is they posted it to future interest payments saying, no, like you're just out of the goodness of your heart, you're gonna pay your interest at year 30 as opposed to like principal today to reduce the term of the loan. I actually thought it was like malice. Like I actually thought like people, like to your point, was it legal or not? I don't know. I you know, there's been all sorts of regulatory activity around this stuff.
Right.
But when Matthew, my co-founder, and I started investigating the industry a little bit, we discovered it's actually not malice. It's just that the industry has old technology. The structure of the industry is such that there's no incentive for people to get that right. All sorts of issues. And that became the birth of EarnUp, right? So here I am as a person who's got an engineering degree, has a law degree, who understands these things. I did buy side, so I understand how debt instruments work and that kind of thing. If this is happening to me, what's happening? And I say this modestly, like what's happening to the layperson, right? And so then that's how we came up with EarnUp.
Can we go back and talk about your parents really fast
so I
can better understand what happened there? So how did their 30-year mortgage additionally have 20 years added to the term?
Oh, so what they ended up doing is they were not making extra principal payments, right? And so then when you do that, you don't own the home or you don't build equity as quickly. And so then if you do things like refi the home and you
Got
dip
it.
Into equity and that kind of stuff, those are like actually mistakes that a lot of homeowners make.
Right.
Because they get approached by the industry and say, you can lower your payment. Well, what people don't, I mean, the most useful.
No free lunch there.
Yeah, there's no free lunch there. And the most useful statistic there is if I go to somebody and say, hey, you're on a 30-year mortgage, by year 15, let's say it's a $200,000 mortgage. And I say, by year 15, which is half of the term, how much of the home do you own? Like, how much of the principal have you paid? Most people will say, well, half, like $100,000 worth, right? And the answer is no. You've probably paid like $30,000 left, and like $170,000 is left to make. And so it's like, a lot of people don't realize that the principal
is actually
on the back end of the loan.
And the interest is brought forward.
And the interest is brought forward.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So
no pun intended.
Yeah. So the first foray into this, you know, quagmire of an issue was your parents. And then you had your own experiences with it.
Yep.
How did that turn into the creation of this company?
We just realized this structure was broken.
All right.
And then, and so we're like, hey, here's an opportunity to go start a business. We had been talking about, we're looking at different areas to start
to
a
do
business.
Something.
Yeah, to do something.
So what does EarnUp do? How does EarnUp fix this problem?
Yeah. So EarnUp today is an enterprise software company.
Okay.
All right. And what we do is we offer software to enterprises to help them reduce the risk that they are exposed to, as well as help them service their customers better. Right. So we're, we operate at the intersection of mortgage payments and data. And the one of the ways that they do that is they create an interface, or they have an interface through our product for the borrower to interface with them. Right. And through that, the borrower is able to achieve better financial health. So it's a combination of the founding story plus helping the enterprise improve its business.
Okay. Question. Why would a mortgage provider want to do this if it is in their best interest to do it the old way?
It's
at least from a financial perspective.
Yeah, it's not necessarily, and so this is where it gets pretty
complicated.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily in against their interest to offer, it's actually in their interest to offer products like this. Right?
Can you help me understand how? Because like intuitively, so I would assume the opposite.
Yeah, let me go up to the 50,000 foot level. It'll feel like we're at 3,000 feet though, but let me give you. The mortgage industry in the United States is almost completely socialized. I think a lot of people don't understand that. There's these things called government-sponsored entities, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae.
Right.
And they effectively own, this is not exactly technically right, but they effectively own like 60% of the homes in the United States. They are like the lender of last resort should something happen. And like 2008, also, like you can look up this, or a lot of stuff happened to them. And they're actually still in government conservatorship since that crisis. So what ends up happening is when you originate a loan, and this is just the average loan, it's not every single loan. When you originate the loan is originated, the loan officer and the lender make some money associated with that. And then the loan actually gets split into three different pieces. Which is kind of crazy, right?
Okay.
So the first piece is actually the underlying asset owner, right? And what I mean by that is like there's a $200,000 loan. Who owns that $200,000 loan and who earns the interest payments off of that $200,000 loan? Those are typically syndicated out on the mortgage-backed securities market.
Okay.
So if you wanted to, actually most Americans don't even realize this, they actually own a piece of a mortgage-backed security somewhere because they've been fractionalized or collateralized into so many different pieces. So if you like have life insurance, well, the life insurance companies tend to hold a lot of their reserves in the mortgage-backed securities market.
Right.
Okay. So that's one piece, who the underlying asset owner is. Second piece is, if you think about a loan, somebody's got to collect the payments.
Right? So that's the servicer.
That's the servicer, right?
Okay.
And there's and under Fannie and Freddie, and I don't know if I have the numbers exactly correct, about 25 bips, right, of the, about 25 bips of the value of the loan is provided to the entity that services the loan.
Okay, got it.
So they're getting fees to service that loan.
Okay. Cool.
So they're getting those fees to service those loans. Now, if you're getting 25 bips for every loan you're servicing, you can actually see that there's, wait a second, there's like a separate economic right associated with servicing the loan.
Okay.
So that's known as the STRIP or the MSR, the mortgage servicing right.
Okay.
And those are separately sold.
Oh, so you have to buy the right to service.
Exactly.
Okay, so far we have the CMBS or the MBS portion, which is the actual person who owns, like if it goes into foreclosure, that's the person who would get it.
Yeah, sort of.
Because or you have the Fannie majority.
And, you have Fannie and Freddie backing this up. So if and there's like.
So let me rephrase that and make it more simple. So, so far we have the CMBS, MBS portion, which is like the actual, the bulk of the loan, so to speak. And then that money has to be collected by someone, which you said 25 bips are the strip. And that is another thing that's sold because people actually like make bids to have the right to service the loan.
Yeah, it's actually what ends up, well, yes. And then actually there's a nuance to that and I can get into that.
Okay, and then what's the third thing before we get into the
nuance? Third thing is actually like who does the servicing. So one is the economic right of the MSR.
I see.
And then the second, the third piece is like who does the servicing.
Okay.
So let me give you an example of a loan being originated. I'm just going to, I don't know. I don't want to pick names because like we're on video here, but let's just call it the originator.
Okay.
So the originator originates the loan and then it gets split into three pieces, right? So, and the originator can do anything it wants with those three pieces. So like years ago, the majority of this stuff would be held by the bank that was originating the loan.
Right.
They would hold the asset on their balance sheet.
Right.
They would maintain the ownership of the strip, the mm-hmm. MSR, and they would service the loan themselves. Right. What has happened is there's been a pretty big shift in the industry over the past 10 years for a lot of these banks to no longer do this and have non-bank financial institutions do this. And mm-hmm. that's what's known as, like, generally as the non-bank servicers.
Got it.
So let's say the loan is originated, and then what ends up happening is the actual principal of the loan mm-hmm. moves to wherever it's going to move to. So it gets syndicated out, right?
Right.
The originator at that point in time has a choice. They can sell the servicing strip or they can own it. Right, and they can kind of collect the economic, and so that's sometimes called servicer retained. Mm-hmm. If you're maintaining the ownership of that MSR, mm-hmm. and independently of that, they can choose to service that loan or not service the loan. So there's four different combinations in there. They can own the strip and have somebody subservice it mm-hmm. for them. They can own the strip and do the subservicing themselves.
Right.
They can sell the strip and do the subservicing. Nobody really does that, mm-hmm. but they can do that, and you can sell the strip and have somebody else do the subservicing.
Right.
So, like, you can see how this gets pretty
complicated. Lots of optionality.
Lots of optionality.
Yeah. Okay, got it. So going back to how this all ties into EarnUp.
Yeah.
Make that connection for me.
So we got three products.
Okay.
That's the way to think about it. We have what we call, very creatively, the originator product.
Okay.
Right? And that focuses on originators. And here what we're doing is, I don't know if you've ever, if you own a mortgage, you've ever gone through the mortgage experience.
Nope.
Well, what typically happens is because of all of this stuff that's happening, mm-hmm. let's take an originator. They originate the loan. They're required by law to be able to collect that first payment on the loan. Okay?
Okay.
So they originate the loan. They do not have a business model where they maintain the strip or do the subservicing. That's just not their business model.
So they could collect one payment and then they're out.
They're required to be able to collect one payment and then they're out.
Okay.
Okay. So what many of them do is they hire a subservicer.
Okay.
Right, and they hire a subservicer to say, in order for me to collect this one payment, like, I need somebody to do that.
Right.
So you originate the loan, you get this really obscure message or email or something that says, hey, send the payment to this subservicer or this servicer.
Right. Right.
Then about 20 days in, could be 30 days in, could be 45 days in, what ends up happening is that lender that originated the loan sells the strip.
Okay.
And the entity that owns that mortgage servicing right has a different subservicer.
Wow.
Right.
So far we already have two subservicers apart from the originator.
Nailed it. And this is what creates a terrible experience in the mortgage service in the mortgage world, right?
Okay.
So you as a customer, you originate the loan, and I'm just gonna say, like, let's call it Acme Bank, right?
We're making a payment to someone other than Acme Bank, and then we're making 30 days or 45 days later
to yet another
person. So it's like you're sending, you know, checks or wires out into, like, yonder land.
Yeah, that's essentially right.
Wow.
And it's a terrible customer experience. And so what ends up, so just to, like, play that all back, right? You originate the loan. So let's say you start, maybe I'll use some real names here, right? I probably shouldn't, but, like, you go to, like, a website, you go into Google and you type in, like, mortgage rates, mm-hmm. and you find one of these, like, mortgage rate lead gen companies, and they say, here are four potential mortgage rates, mm-hmm. right? You pick one and you go to that as the lender/originator.
Right.
They spend a bunch of money on those leads, mm-hmm. right? And they spend a bunch of money to make sure that their platform can convert those leads into mortgages. And the cost of acquisition for those leads has been going up because the, you know, mortgage industry is growing.
Right,
and
right.
It's been due to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So then they originate that loan, right? And they've developed all sorts of brand loyalty. They spent all this money making sure it's a smooth experience. Mm-hmm. They've developed all the brand loyalty. Mm-hmm. And then on day one, after originating a loan, the customer gets a letter saying, send your payments here. And you're like, what the, like, WTF?
I bought it from here, I am paying it there, right. It's confusing.
It's confusing.
Yeah.
And then 20 days later, it moves to another entity, let's call this, like, you know, Joe Bank, mm-hmm. right? And then the customer's like, well, I spent all this time, 30 to 45 days, whatever it is, mm-hmm. with this originator, I've now gotten swapped, like, WTF, mm-hmm. and here's the second WTF, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? And so what we've done is we've created a solution that acts as the intermediary that's private labeled between entities so that the experience is very smooth.
And hence the incentive for the actual company.
The incentive for the lender to use our product is to have that smooth experience so they maintain the brand loyalty for that.
Okay, user. Got it. Yeah. So from the consumer perspective, the reason you want to be, you know, utilizing this product is because it's better for the consumer, hence the examples with your family and yourself.
Yeah.
And then from the entity perspective, it creates a cohesive experience that's consistent with their brand,
yes.
where you're not jumping and playing hot potato,
yes.
from here to there to there.
That's product number one.
Okay, so that is the originator product.
That's the originator product.
The other two products are also on the enterprise side. So who are those two for?
Yeah, so the second product is what we call, again, our service or product.
Okay. Super interesting names for these products.
Yeah, actually, to be fair to the marketing group, it's actually like Get Ahead is the name of,
okay,
of a lot of these
got
products.
It.
I shouldn't say that. But it's Get Ahead, right? And
got
so
it.
The Get Ahead product on the servicer side, mm-hmm, does two things. So if you're a servicer, mm-hmm, and you offer this product to your borrowers, mm-hmm, there's a couple things that happen. And the core of the product is pay when you get paid of this product.
Okay.
And by the way, a lot of this stuff is included in the originator product too.
Got
it's
it.
Pay when you get paid. So, and this is where a lot of the mission-driven financial health component of the business comes out, because we are like a double bottom line business.
Right. Right.
So we have investors with an express focus of making money on the business.
Right.
And we have a set of investors with express interest, like including nonprofit investors, mm-hmm, with like who are track us and make sure that we're delivering social impact in the world.
All right. So we just finished talking about the originator product. You said,
yeah,
there's two more components of EarnUp.
Yeah.
Tell me,
yeah,
about those.
Yeah. So there's a second product, which is the Get Ahead Auto Pay product.
And okay.
This is an enterprise product that's offered typically to servicers. And there's some, it's based on the foundation of pay when you get paid.
Okay.
So again, getting back to the mission-driven roots of the business, 70% of Americans get paid, 70% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
Right. So in the mortgage ecosystem, you can only make a mortgage payment once per month.
Right.
And that is as a result of all the other stuff I've explained, like the securitization of the instruments, the MBS market, et cetera,
right.
Right. So making multiple payments over the course of a month is like actually a really hard thing to do.
Right.
And so what we do is say, pay when you get paid. So we'll take a proportional amount of the loan. You get paid every Friday.
Yep.
The majority of Americans don't get paid monthly. Something like 90% of Americans don't get paid monthly.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like 60% of Americans, I think, get paid weekly. So what we're saying is, you know, every week you get paid on Fridays,
mm-hmm,
take like, let's say it's a $1,000 mortgage payment, take $250 out every Friday. It becomes a smaller chunk, much more manageable, right? And what, surprise, like what happens is when you take money the day is available, people actually make their payments on
right.
time. So like we've actually seen delinquency reduction of 20 to 40% just by introducing that kind of technology.
Got it.
So that's really useful to servicers because the cost since Dodd-Frank of in 2008, Dodd-Frank, 2009, the mm-hmm. cost of managing a delinquent loan has gone up by 500%. So like huge cost savings for the
mm-hmm.
servicer.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, for the user, mm-hmm. right, for the borrower, they're getting the benefit of ensuring that their payments aren't late. They're getting a second benefit, which is the convenience. So like there's a belief that the reason why people don't make payments on their loans or miss payments on any of their debts is because mm-hmm. they're like deadbeats, right? It's like what we've become to learn. Like you read the papers, you read, you watch TV. It's just like
assumption.
You miss a payment, like you're a deadbeat. And it's just not true, right? 70% of missed payments are actually avoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So what we do is we create a convenient platform to help people work through that. So
mm-hmm.
for example, I'll give you an example. We had three employees a couple of weeks ago on our team. We use a payroll vendor,
mm-hmm.
and for whatever reason, the payroll vendor messed up their paychecks. And they're supposed to get on Friday. They didn't get paid on a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, what do we do about that? Well, we had to cut a manual check to them. We had
mm-hmm.
to talk to the payroll vendor. By the time the money entered their account, it was the Wednesday after, right? So for us, like with our product, you just log in and you hit a pause button
mm-hmm.
and you wait until that paycheck clears.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And think about like how the economy is shifting where people are making more,
right.
like are, their income streams are just less consistent, right?
Right.
So you just go
lots
on the
lots of freelancing.
Exactly.
Multiple revenue streams.
And they're living paycheck to paycheck.
Right.
So you just go and hit pause. Now, if you do that today with the majority of the services, and I'm not denigrating them, again, the structure of the industry is such that it's really hard for them to do,
mm-hmm.
what happens is you miss that. And if the payment's not coming out that day, if the payment comes out that day, you're done.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like you got a late fee. But if it's not coming out that day and it's coming out on Monday or Tuesday, you have to call them, you have to wait on hold, you have to cancel the auto pay, right? Then you make the payment manually. And
a lot
then you
of
call
friction.
Them. Yeah. You got to call them again. You got to set up the auto pay again. And then many times they'll say, well, I'm not sure if this auto pay is going to come out on this payment or the next payment. And so you may have to wait.
Right.
Right. So we just make that really, really convenient for users to start, stop, pause, and do whatever. And we can do that actually across all the debt classes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're using our product, you can do this for personal loans, you can do this for student loans, et cetera.
Got it.
So that's like the second benefit. And then the third benefit, which actually turns out to be really good for servicers, although it's counterintuitive,
mm-hmm.
is we use a lot of behavioral psychology hacks. Right, and we've worked with the folks in the past with like Irrational Labs,
mm-hmm.
right, to, through these behavioral psychology hacks, get people to make extra contributions of principal onto their loans. So actually 90% of our users are accelerating their loans.
Got it.
They're going to do the thing that I tried to do.
Right.
Right. And didn't succeed at doing, which is take that term from a 30 year into a 20 year term. And the reason why that's good for servicers is actually we've shown that users that accelerate their loans actually stay on the servicing platform longer.
Got it. So they'll get a second mortgage or something like that?
One of the biggest economic risks for a servicer is that they paid the customer acquisition cost for that mortgage strip that we were talking about before, and then the customer goes and refis. They lose that customer acquisition fee very early. So what we do is by offering that accelerated loan is they stay on the platform longer.
Got it. So they have a higher chance of getting a return there.
Yeah, less churn.
All right, so third product.
So this is what we're most excited about. This is the Get Ahead Dashboard product, and it's a data layer that sits on top of all of this.
Okay.
Right, and so when a customer starts using our data platform, with their consent, we get access to their user permission data associated with their checking account.
Okay.
And now we can see things like, in the mortgage world, if you're an enterprise, you can see everything that's happening around the house, but not what's happening inside the house.
Right.
So like, let's say you originate a loan. On day one, the lender has like a 100-page dossier on you. They like know everything about you. It's like they know who your best friend was from like 10 years ago. They really like dig deep and figure this stuff out. Mm-hmm. Year one, they have the same set of information. It's barely updated. Year two is, year 10, it's the same set of information.
It's a static profile.
It's a static profile because of the way that loans are securitized out in the market, right?
Right.
So you can't update it. You can't change the underlying bond and debt instrument. So like having more information about that borrower would actually be much, much better. So you can see everything that's happening around the house. You can see the value of the houses. You can see what the economy is doing, but you can't see income and you can't see employment. And those two things together, you can derive debt to income, which is like one of the key metrics in determining the financial health of a mortgage borrower. So for us, if you see the income going up and you see interest rates coming down, or you see like they've switched jobs, right? Why not get ahead of that? Get ahead dashboard. Why not get ahead of that and say, hey, here's an opportunity for you to refinance your loan, right? Before somebody else comes along and you know,
sweeps them up.
Sweeps them, exactly. Yeah. I like that. Sweeps them up, right?
Yeah.
Other side of things is what we call loss mitigation. You lost your job. A lot of people are scared about telling their servicers that they've lost their job and they may not be able to make a payment.
Right.
The earlier they do that, the better, because there are programs, some of them government mandated, that helps them manage through the circumstances. We actually saw a lot of that during the pandemic, where people were entering into these forbearance programs.
Right.
It actually really, really helped these borrowers avoid a situation where they're just like going into foreclosure.
Right.
So if you can see that ahead of time, then the servicer can get ahead of that, or the originator can get ahead of that and say, hey, we're seeing that you might be having problems paying your loan. We actually can tell 15 to 30 days ahead of time whether somebody's going to miss a payment or not.
Oh, it's predictive.
It's predictive.
Interesting. Yeah. And who is that last product primarily aimed at? Is it people who are interested in like alternative data sources? Is it?
It's the originators and the servicers.
Oh, got
it. So in the originator space, you originate. Remember, I talked about this high cost customer acquisition.
Exactly. That you want to be able to get a return on. So
exactly. And maintaining that smooth brand loyalty experience.
Right.
So let's say you're originator Acme Bank. You originate the loan. Instead of having this terrible experience where everything's bouncing around, right, you end up having this Acme Bank smooth experience.
Got it. So product two and product three are essentially, they're complementary to one another.
Product one and there's product two. They're all complementary to each other. Product one and product two, and then there's a data layer that's
sitting on top of it.
That sits on top.
Okay, got it.
And so just to finish the thought, right? So you have this smooth experience.
Right.
Right. Now the originator is paying this money to have this smooth experience so they maintain the brand loyalty.
Right.
So then when it comes time for the user, instead of being swept away, for that borrower to get swept away, we can see ahead of time and tell the originator, who's our customer, and say, this customer is likely to go refinance somewhere else. Let's get ahead of that.
Right.
And make sure that they're not swept away.
Got it. Okay. That is a complex product, but I'm glad that we went through it step by step, because I think I get it. So to recap, to make sure I understand, two primary components. There's the product for the originator. There's the product for the servicer.
Yep.
And then there's the data layer, the Get Ahead platform or dashboard that sits on top of all of it.
Yep.
That essentially like allows you to have predictive modeling for both parties, the servicer and the originator,
and the borrower, ultimately.
Yep. Right? But it helps all three parties involved. So in this particular case, the borrower, the servicer, and the originator to get more out of that particular set of relationships.
Nailed it.
Okay.
You said it better than I
could. Cool.
This is great.
I highly doubt that.
Yeah, no, you did. You said it much better. I gotta like write it down.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So now that we have a better understanding of what EarnUp is and what you guys are doing right now, where is the company going?
Yeah. So we want to continue to deliver on our mission of financial health for our users, our borrowers, right?
Right.
So let's put that there as, you know, like as one of the major goals. Mm-hmm. There's a second major goal, which is, again, going back to the founding experience of the business, mm-hmm. is taking all of these back-end systems
right.
that are influencing the experiences that these borrowers have mm-hmm. and turning them from like a back office afterthought to a experience that differentiates the originators and servicers mm-hmm. in the space where the borrowers are interacting with them. So,
got it.
And that happens one component at a time. So if you look at the history of the business, we started focusing on payments, like in the mortgage space, mm-hmm. right? And so we developed that product number two, that get ahead auto pay product, right? And then we started building on top of that. And now we're starting to say, okay, the next component is data, right? And so for us, it's saying, okay, data. If we start to put data on top of the payments platform, we mm-hmm. can start to deliver unique insights that are going to help the borrower and help the enterprise customer. And next for us is how do we turn that originator and that servicer experience or that relationship mm-hmm. into one that further helps the borrower? So let me give you an example. Borrowers on the servicer platform, right, or even the originator platform in the original, you know, the original product, why aren't we offering home insurance to the mm-hmm. user at a, like a discounted rate? Because the entire relationship is going to stay there mm-hmm. and the relationship will be more sticky, right? It's a good way of maintaining the relationship with the customer and keeping them on the platform.
Got it.
So what we call that is like step three of the products is like our embedded finance path. That's a little bit more, bit more in development. We're going to release some of that stuff over the next 6 months, but it's like, it really, like I really think, maybe a way to think about it is, I don't know if you're familiar with the fintech concept of like the unbundling, the bundling and the unbundling of like
yep.
services. So like 30 years ago, like all of your bank was just your bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what subsequently happened is everything's been unbundled to
Asset
products.
Asset management goes to yeah. Robinhood or Webull, you know, your yeah. normal banking checking account goes to a neobank.
Yes,
totally gotcha.
Exactly right. We're looking to rebundle that at the point of the mortgage originator and the servicer as much as we can.
Got it.
Your most trusted financial relationship, whether you like them or not, not saying, like what we found from users is a lot of them don't like their checking account provider and mm-hmm. their bank that they primarily use, but they trust them, which is an interesting distinction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your most trusted financial relationship was the bank that where your paycheck goes into in that mm-hmm. bank account. What should be your second most trusted relationship is the entity you pay your mortgage to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like your biggest expenditure
obligation.
And an obligation over the course of the month, and it's not. Right? It just isn't. Like if you talk to anybody who's like, yeah, I hate my mortgage servicer
mm-hmm.
in most instances, not all instances.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to change that. Again, taking it from a back office afterthought and bringing it forward to be a differentiation.
Front of mind.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yep.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.